It's the NPR News Update for Friday, August 23rd. Minnesota's news on your schedule. I'm Matt Sepik in for Phil Picardi. In the news today, the more than 600 people civilly committed to Minnesota's sex offender program want the program declared unconstitutional. The Bemidji School District is the defendant in three lawsuits alleging sex abuse by a former teacher. And Minnesota's new online health insurance marketplace goes live in just over a month, but will it be ready? Lawyers representing hundreds of people being held indefinitely in the Minnesota Sex Offender Program have asked a federal judge to declare that program unconstitutional. Rupa Shenoy has more.
One person has been successfully released from the program's prison-like facilities. Offenders filed a class action suit charging there's no clear path to release. Their lawyers had been in talks with the state to settle the suit. The sex offender's lead attorney, Dan Gustafson, says those talks have stalled. He's filed a motion asking a federal magistrate judge require the state to immediately provide less restrictive alternatives. Another motion requests the judge appoint a special federal master to oversee changes to the program. The State Department of Human Services says it's reviewing the motions. In a statement, Deputy Commissioner Ann Berry says it's taking steps that address concerns and balance client needs with public safety. A judge will likely rule on the motions at a November 15th hearing. Rupa Shenoy, Minnesota Public Radio News.
Three girls are suing the Bemidji School District over sexual abuse. They claim former physical education teacher John Wangberg sexually abused them in his office at Central Elementary School between 2008 and 2011. The girls were 5 and 6 years old at the time. Wangberg resigned in 2011 and died by suicide at his home last January after he was charged with criminal sexual conduct. St. Paul attorney Jeff Anderson filed the lawsuits this week. The plaintiffs alleged the district was negligent in allowing Wangberg unsupervised access to students even after school officials were warned about his alleged conduct. Bemidji School Superintendent James Hess says the district denies any liability. The Hennepin County Sheriff's Office is investigating the officer-involved shooting death of a man early today. Major Kip Carver of the Sheriff's Office says Brooklyn Center Police stopped a vehicle near the intersection of Shingle Creek Parkway and the entrance ramp to westbound 694-94. Carver says a man in the vehicle struggled with officers before he was shot and killed. The groundbreaking for a new Minnesota Vikings stadium could be delayed. Officials involved in the nearly billion-dollar project are expected to meet today to discuss a revised timetable. Minnesota Sports Facilities Authority Chair Michelle Kelm-Helgen says they're now eyeing a November start to major construction. That's slightly later than the October start date set earlier. Millions of dollars in contracts have already been signed. Yet to come, a lease with the team, a maximum construction price, and a bond sale to pay for it all. Meanwhile, the authority is conducting a probe into the finances of Ziggy and Mark Wilf, the team's New Jersey-based owners. The examination is meant to ensure the brothers will meet their $477 million private financial pledge. There's just 6 weeks to go before MinSure, the state's online health insurance marketplace, goes live. Building MinSure is a big, complex project being developed quickly, and that has some of the state's leading insurance companies wondering and worrying about whether everything will go smoothly come October 1st when MinSure is scheduled to open for business. Reporter Catherine Richard has been talking to insurers who want to sell their plans on the new exchange. All Things Considered host Tom Cran asked her what she found out.
First of all, how is MinSure supposed to work? Give us a brief summary of that.
Well, the hope is that it's all going to work seamlessly. And by seamlessly, I mean someone looking to buy health insurance should be able to log on October 1st, find out if they qualify for federal subsidies or Medicaid, for instance. They should be able to compare plans, pick one, and even pay for it.
Now, how are the insurance plans that actually will be selling that coverage on the exchange feeling about the whole thing at this point?
Well, in a word, nervous. I spoke to executives with Blue Cross Blue Shield of Minnesota, Health Partners, and Medica, and they all had similar concerns. Not so much big red flags, but just a lot of uncertainty surrounding this really massive IT project that's being done in a very short period of time. If something goes wrong, they fear it might hurt their brand. So, you know, one thing they're worried about is that this is an untested platform. They've never sold health insurance on an exchange before, so they don't know how it's going to go. And they also don't have any control over how MinSure looks and functions. And that's also a point of anxiety.
Even Governor Mark Dayton not long ago said it's going to be a major technical challenge. This is big and complicated. Why is it so complicated?
Well, again, it's all happening in a very quick period of time. But it's also that there's a lot of moving parts to this. MnSure has to be able to talk, so to speak, to a federal data hub so it can verify if someone is eligible for subsidies or Medicaid, for instance. And it also needs to transmit someone's enrollment and payment information to the insurers. And each of those insurers has a very unique IT system, so that's got to match up to a number of different systems.
And they all have to talk to each other.
Right.
Yeah. So what sorts of glitches are the insurers and MnSure preparing for at this point?
Well, there are big questions about this federal hub. The federal government is still doing some critical testing around making sure private information is secure, but those tests have actually been delayed by a few weeks. So they're a little behind. MnSure says that it has been able to connect to this federal hub and get information. So that's a good thing. There are also some questions about whether the MnSure site will be able to transmit personal information back to the insurers. But the biggest concern that the insurers have is how MnSure operates from the consumer's perspective. They don't want new consumers to be turned off by the insurance buying experience, because for them, that means lost business.
And that's about what they're calling the user experience, right?
Right.
The state is building the MnSure website, and that will shape this user experience. Do we know what that's going to be like?
Well, a little bit. MnSure has a website. You can go to it and visit it and learn some things about how this is all going to work. But in terms of how the plans will be displayed and how people will be able to compare them, we won't know that until October 1st.
So is everyone then coming up with a plan B if parts of this don't work?
Yeah. You know, MnSure is looking at ways to verify eligibility for new enrollees if that federal hub doesn't work. And the insurers are anticipating having to do some manual entry of enrollment information. And they're looking at ways to do that so it doesn't delay things for the consumer. And in the meantime, the insurers are really focused on customer service. Again, this is all about making sure that those consumers have no trouble getting health insurance and that they get insured. So they're looking at ways to educate people about MnSure. People at the Health Partners hospitals, for instance, will be able to talk to people about MnSure and help them navigate it. So that's a big key point for the insurers at this point.
That was Catherine Richard talking with All Things Considered host Tom Cran about MnSure, which goes live on October 1st. In Fargo today, farm equipment suppliers are meeting with a dozen farmers and business owners. Nothing uncommon about that, but these folks came a long way to Fargo. They're from Africa. And as Dan Gunderson reports, it could be the start of a long-term relationship. The African food producers want better technology so they can produce more soybeans and corn, and the Americans see an opportunity to tap into a growing market for farm equipment.
A farm in the Red River Valley with its massive tractors and combines is very different from the average farm in Uganda.
In Uganda, we use mainly peasant farming, with the basic tool being the hoe. And small numbers, very fragmented. That is not sustainable.
Ugandan farmer Patrick Baturi sees the American Midwest as a model for the future of farming in his country, especially now that he sees the effects of climate change.
We've been in a slumber for way too long, and with the global warming, now the reality has begun to hit hard. We have to change what we are doing if we're going to get different results.
Africa has the most undeveloped farmland of any continent. That's one reason the U.S. Trade and Development Agency started organizing what they call reverse trade missions. Ken Peoples is a consultant who organizes trade missions for the agency. He says Africa is where most of the new food production will happen in the next 25 to 30 years. He says businesses should see the opportunity to get a foot in the door.
I keep telling every U.S. company it will take 2 to 3 years before they end up making a purchase. But if they nurture that connection, they will have a customer for life.
European, Chinese, and South American companies are also competing for those African markets. But the African farmers say they want American technology because they think it's the best in the world.
From what I've seen in the USA, I say, wow, I wish I can open my eyes the next time, and it is there in Africa.
Yao Adupoko processes soybeans and corn for about 3,000 small farmers in Ghana.
I went to these factories that do irrigated equipment, and all my prayer was that, when do I see this on the land back home? Because immediately I saw the dollars clicking, and I saw creation of employment, and I saw satisfaction on the weather-beaten faces of the farmers.
Poku might get his wish and bring irrigation to those farmers in Ghana, but it won't be easy. Most banks in Africa won't lend money to farmers. Trade officials say African banks will only lend money for equipment if American banks guarantee the loans. The logistics of shipping big tractors and dealing with government regulations can also be a challenge. But Midwest agribusinesses see a potential big market. Stacy Anthony manages export sales for Brandt Holdings. The Fargo company runs 25 John Deere equipment dealerships in 5 Midwestern states. Brandt Holdings already exports used equipment to 18 other countries. American farmers are making good money, and they're buying a lot of new equipment. So there's an oversupply of used tractors and farm implements. Anthony sees a lot of opportunity to ship that used equipment to Africa.
I would say it's very probable that we could see sales continue to grow to Africa over the next 2 to 3 years by, 15 to 20%. The demand and the need is there, and definitely the supply is here on this side. So all of the workings are in place to make that happen.
The African delegation will spend today touring farm equipment factories in Fargo. On Monday, they'll visit equipment manufacturers in Jackson, Minnesota. Dan Gunderson, Minnesota Public Radio News, Fargo.
This is the NPR News Update, Minnesota's news on your schedule. Don't feed the wildlife. It's a message Minnesota campers and hikers have heard pretty often, usually in regard to deer or bears. But this summer, wildlife managers are expanding that message to wolves. In at least 2 locations in northeastern Minnesota, people have been feeding wolf pups. And as Dan Crocker reports, officials are concerned those easy meals could have very negative consequences.
Gary Heppala pulls his pickup out of the parking lot of Hugo's, the bar and general store he runs with his wife in the tiny town of Brimson, about 40 miles north of Duluth. It doesn't take long to see a wolf pup.
You'll notice they have no fear here. They'll come right up to that window.
Sure enough, the young wolf, with pointy ears and splotches of gray, white, and tan fur, ambles right up to Heppala's open window.
What are you doing? Get off the road.
Heppala says the wolves have grown steadily bolder over the past 6 weeks or so. He says he's seen people place piles of food on the side of the road to lure the wolves in close to snap pictures.
I've chewed a few people out. So don't be feeding the wolves. People don't realize, they're going to become adults. They're cute now. Not so cute when they're big.
But Heppala fears that some of these pups might not even make it to adulthood. One of the 8 was killed by a car last week. Nancy Hansen, DNR Assistant Area Wildlife Manager in Two Harbors, says that number could grow.
They are at a very busy intersection. It's going to get busier with hunting seasons coming up. So I'm concerned.
Hansen says the wolf pups are using a stretch of forest near the intersection of 2 county highways as a rendezvous site. The adults in the pack leave the pups to hunt and then bring food back to them. Wildlife experts say people sometimes see wolf pups alone, maybe think they look thin, and assume they've been abandoned and need food. Hansen says the DNR is trying to educate the public otherwise.
Basically, we really need people to police themselves. As neat as it is to see these animals, this is not a normal situation. And anything they're doing to, get a picture taken with a wolf pup or feed a wolf pup, it's not good for the pups.
Hansen says they can't relocate the pups because they'd either die away from the pack or just return to the rendezvous point.
If we can't turn it around, we'll probably have to capture these pups and they'll either have to be moved to a facility or destroyed.
Hansen says she's never seen a situation like the Hugo's wolves, as she refers to them. She says news of the wolves has spread like wildfire on Facebook and more people are flocking to see them. Jess Edberg, Information Services Director at the International Wolf Center in Ely, says she's dealing with a similar situation on the Echo Trail near the Boundary Waters canoe area.
So the wolf pups are hanging on the road, sitting on the road, watching vehicles go by, and then somebody did see that there was fresh food put out there.
Edberg says every year or two she hears of emboldened wolves not fleeing from passing cars. In those situations, she says it's not enough to just not feed them. She says even a passive observer can encourage wolves to frequent an area.
We want to make sure that wildlife have a healthy fear avoidance of humans. So honking your horn or yelling, not encouraging the animal to be there is going to be helpful for the survival of that animal.
Back at Hugo's Bar in Brimson, owner Jody Heppala says the wolves have become something of a tourist attraction.
The store's been busy. Lots of people come in to comment and get a snack while they're out looking for the wolves, and lots of phone calls asking, are there really wolves up there, and what time of day, and where can we see you?
But Heppala says she'd gladly give up the increased business. She wants the wolves to learn to fend for themselves. As I drive out of Brimson, two wolf pups trot straight at my car, right down the yellow dotted line in the center of the county highway. They approach my open window as I slow down. It's something Gary Heppele experiences nearly every day. As he puts it, it's fun and exciting to see a wolf so close, but also disconcerting to see wolves so comfortable around him. Dan Crocker, Minnesota Public Radio News.
The Minnesota State Fair got underway yesterday, and one of the new attractions this year is not something battered and fried in oil. The fair has set up 18 designated smoking areas for people to enjoy a little nicotine on a stick. Fair officials say the new policy is in response to visitor feedback, and some fairgoers, non-smokers and smokers alike, say it's a good idea. Brent Williams reports.
Excited fairgoers slowly began trickling through the main gates on Danpatch Avenue as the rising sun brightened the sky over their shoulders. In front of them, the relatively empty fairgrounds full of new attractions and old favorites. State Fair spokeswoman Brianna Schutte says, of course, the main draw for visitors are some of the nearly 50 new food items at the fair, from Cajun pork rinds with Alabama white sauce to chocolate chili ice cream. Schutte says creating a new smoking policy had been in the works for a while. She says fair staff have received a lot of feedback from visitors about smoking. Schutte says some fairgoers wanted to ban it altogether.
And so we started doing a lot of research, as we do in planning the fair every year, talking to other state fairs, talking to other festivals, looking at what other entertainment and sporting venues do in town. And so this is the solution that the fair came up with in creating these 18 designated smoking areas.
The smoking areas are marked on maps and at the information kiosks with the symbol of a cigarette butt. However, some are a little hard to find. No large signs identify the areas. And in some spots, they're just standalone ashtrays near groups of benches. Schutte says since this is the first year of the new policy, fair staff may need to make some tweaks here and there. She says smokers in non-designated areas will not be scolded.
Our philosophy really is this is the Great Minnesota Get-Together. This is a friendly place, so we'll offer friendly reminders that there are these designated areas to have a cigarette on the grounds now.
So far, the new policy is a hit with some non-smokers, like Jan Bond from Nisswa.
I love everything about the fair.
Have you noticed that they're also doing a new policy with smoking this year?
Yes, I love that.
Bond says she doesn't like being in the wake of a smoker while walking along the street or sitting at a bench, as she's doing now. The policy is even getting some positive reviews from some smokers sitting in a designated area near the State Fair Administration building. Nancy Larson of St. Paul says she doesn't mind being segregated while she has a cigarette. And she says some of the smoking areas should be even more removed from the public areas.
Yeah, I think it's great to have it away from kids. More of them should be away from kids. I'm surprised there are so many that are around kids yet, like by the grandstand. They should be farther away.
But not everyone here at the State Fair is as receptive to the new smoking policy. Okay, sheep don't smoke. But John Amaker does. He's a retired carpenter from St. Paul. And Amaker says he doesn't like the policy. He says, before you know it, you won't be able to smoke anywhere.
Next year, you won't be no smoking on the fairground. It'll start at one place you can only smoke here, and pretty soon it's gone, like the bars.
Amaker fears it will happen in the same way smoking was banned in bars.
3 years ago, they never got by with that, with the bars. The people would have told them to go to hell. That they should have done with this.
Yeah. State Fair officials say right now there are no plans to banish smoking from the fairgrounds. However, as in previous years, there is still no smoking in fair buildings or in the entertainment seating areas. Brant Williams, Minnesota Public Radio News, Falcon Heights.
People from small communities all over the state are gathering for Minnesota's Great Get-Together. We sent intern Claire Roth out into the crowd at the State Fair to ask people what makes their hometown so special. First up, Susan Romer Harris, who grew up on the Iron Range in Virginia, Minnesota.
My hometown is full of memories for me, full of wonderful memories growing up. Mom would say, go out and play. You'd go out and play all day long. You were in the neighborhood or the park or somewhere, and it was just small town. Everybody kind of knew everybody else. I liked Cane Lake's candy shop. On the 4th of July, Mr. Cane Lake, one of them, would stand outside and make homemade ice cream bars. He'd cut the ice cream in a rectangle, dip it in the chocolate, roll it in nuts, wrap it in wax paper, and put it in the freezer. Oh, They were so good.
My name is Kendall Bush. I'm from New Auburn, Minnesota. It's a town of about 350 people. It's a quaint little town. A lot of people live there most of their lives. And it's a nice little place to live. It's quiet. You know, it's. I drive about 50 miles into work in Eden Prairie, and I hear all the sirens of town. In our place, it's quiet. It's nice to come home, and it's just, it's a nice place. We live on a dead-end street. Everybody knows each other in our area, and it's fun. It's a fun place to live. My town is homey. It feels like home.
Hello, I'm Brooke Wente, and I'm from Morris, Minnesota. My town is the best town in Minnesota because we are in the Midwestern part of the state, so it's kind of a little desolated from the metro area, so it's a nice place to call home. We have the small community feel. We have one grocery store in our town, so every time you go to the store, it's impossible to go for a quick trip because you'll always run into someone you know, and you'll strike up a conversation, ask them how it's going, and it's fun because you get to go out and about in the community and always see people that you know, and it makes it feel like home because there's always a familiar face.
You can find more My Town Is stories on our website, plus plenty of updates on the state fair. That's mprnews.org. And that'll do it for the NPR News update for this Friday, August 23rd. I'm Matt Sepik. Thanks for downloading.